And good evening, everybody. I don't know why I say evening, because you guys can watch this anytime in the world, but that's because I was a news anchor for 450 years. And everything was at night. The whole world was at 5 o'clock at night. That's when I did all my work. Try that for a job. You work your whole day and the place where you're supposed to be the best is at night, but it doesn't always work that way. I'm excited about the show tonight because it's kind of, it's a story of transformation. It's a guy I met, we'll talk about that, and Eugene years ago, went through some pretty tough stuff, and I've been watching him online, and I'm like, dude, this guy's like really coming around, and life is good. And so I texted him and said, let's talk together. So he said, I will do that. Now, I've got some new opens here, so I don't know which ones they are till I hit them, but we cannot do this without our sponsors, and I'll... Chris Dental Family Dentistry, where everyone is welcome. Dr. Bratlin believes in free speech. He also believes in redemption and people changing their lives. So if you are looking for a dentist who cares about you as an individual, check him out. A lot of people are looking for new dentists, and he's the guy that I highly recommend. Also, this is kind of fun. I have to figure it out. Montana Oral Surgery and Dental Implant Center here in Montana. Just went in last week, shot some video of their implants that they do. And so now instead of getting a denture, you can actually have an implant. It's just like a real tooth, and it really helps because it also helps the teeth around it so that they survive all the things that you're doing to them. Our other sponsor is, I'm looking down here going, I can't read. Oh, Fairway Independent Mortgage. Greg Hinkle is a lender here in Helena, Montana. He also can, he's licensed in Oregon and also Washington State. He's awesome at what he does. And if you're looking for somebody to help you through that process of purchasing a home, getting the money that you need, Greg Hinkle out of Helena is your man. And that's Albert Taylor, Endless Possibilities. They're an awesome organization, Eugene Springfield, centered out of Springfield, work with people with different abilities. So these are group homes, staff help them have the life that they want to have. And it's a very rewarding job, a tough job, but super rewarding. And they're always looking for good staff, people that really understand how to deal with people. And if that's somebody that, if that's you or someone you know, get a hold of Albert Taylor in Springfield, Oregon. All right, now to our topic for tonight. This is Bill, my friend. Bill Heiser, how you doing, buddy?
Well, how about yourself, sir?
I'm doing good, man. So, you know, I guess the story tonight is to tell people a little bit about, well, I guess we could tell them how we met. Tell them how you and I met, I don't know how many years ago, got 10 or 15?
It's been a while for sure. So for the longest time, I had people always telling me, it's like, dude, you look just like Rick Dancer. You look just like Rick Dancer. And so finally, the soccer club I was a member of, we were fundraising for the new kids sport soccer field in Eugene. And we were down there and you were doing your little Rick Dancer thing with your camera. I saw you over there. I just watched you for a while. And I'm like, you know, I got to go meet this guy. And yeah, I mean, from there, it was kind of like kismet. I mean, yeah. We ended up living together and hanging out a bit, having coffee. And
yeah, we loved each other. It was like, it was good stuff. Cause and when you came up, I had just started kind of sporting that haircut, and I go, oh my God, we do kind of look like each other. So, but you had, I mean, growing up and so you had a pretty rough life, which is what I found super interesting about you, because I mean, I think we all have rough lives, but it's like, you were so open about talking about kind of your, the things you went through. And that's what I loved about you. And I still love that about you.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting. I mean, the childhood wasn't all that terrible. I mean, there were circumstances, of course, I think that that we all kind of suffer some damages growing up. For me, I was kind of, I won't say tossed around, but my father lived in Oregon. My mother lived in Texas. And I moved back and forth between them often. Like, I don't think I ever really fully completed a year of school anywhere. It was always back and forth. And then I had aunts and uncles that I intermittently stayed with as well. So I think growing up, I kind of felt disconnected in a lot of ways. And I think that in the long run ended up contributing to some mental health type issues that,
cause you never, is that a lack of stability kind of thing? I mean, were you, or trust maybe? I don't know.
I kind of think there might've been, you know, something leaning towards the trust issue thing, you know, never feeling anchored anywhere. Right. You know, like my siblings, they were anchored in the family because they were always there. They never left. They never saw anything else. So they had the 365 life, you know, and mine was kind of ramshot. So I never really felt anchored in anything. And as I got older, I think that really started to affect me. Like I never could knuckle down with anything. Jobs, relationships, spirituality, especially, there was like a lack of anchor in God. And
I don't think we ever, maybe we did. You tell me, I don't know that we ever used to talk about God or anything like that. Did we?
I don't believe so. You know, and I think that, a lot of that, I feel like I was still kind of floating around the idea of spirituality. You know, I've sought my entire life to find God in everything. You know, I've lived in Buddhist temples, Krishna temples. I've studied, of course, Christianity, and I never anchored in any of them. Like I would dance around it, find the pretty things about it, and then I myself would flutter off to the next pretty thing, you know, and not do the work that it takes to, because, you know, getting anchored in spirituality is work. It's not just like, I'm going to make this decision and it's over, you know?
So you kind of danced around it and played the fun parts. And then when it got hard, went on to the next one.
Exactly. You know, and it's funny, like my meditation the last few days, has been about accountability and how important that is, like in our daily life and our spiritual life, to hold ourselves accountable to who we are and how we practice and what we represent. And that was always my stumbling block when I would study these different religions. You know, I would get to the part about accountability or, you know, working this program, you know, to become better. And I never wanted to do that. I never wanted to face myself. I never wanted to, do the work, you know? So I just left myself suffering even further is what that caused in me anyway.
So I remember a time, and I don't remember how long it goes, but you will, when you just kind of disappeared, and I was getting phone calls and seeing stuff online, and I'm reaching out to try to find you. Kind of tell people that story, if you would.
Yeah. So I don't remember what year it was either. It was a few years ago though. So not anchoring myself in anything solid, around recovery, spirituality, family, like any of that. I left myself wide open, to some hardcore depression, and I found myself in, you know, what I've always called the dark place. And as things built up, like in recovery or mental health or anything like that, I find that the more knowledge that you have, the more you have to become accountable to things. Like, right. You know, and speaking of like recovery AA, they always say a head full of AA and a belly full of booze is torture. You know, because you know here that this is what I should be doing, but this is what I'm doing.
Right.
So I got to that dark spot, and honestly, I just threw in the towel to everything. And, you know, it's that dark humor. You know, I tell people about that experience. It was, very Leaving Las Vegas, if you remember that movie.
I do.
And that was it. Not to overshare, but I disappeared. Everybody's looking for me. Flyers are going up. And I had no clue. I was in my space, and I didn't even consider anybody's feelings or whatever. And I had found a hotel room, and my serious intent was to drink myself to death. I was done. And every day it just got worse and worse. Like the further I got away, the harder it was to turn back around, you know, to feel the familial love, to feel God's love, to feel all of those things. It was more shame and powerlessness and just emptiness. And I wish I could pinpoint exactly what it was that just made me make the phone call to my family. I ended up calling my mother, you know, and saying, okay, this is where I am. This is what's going on. And after that, that's kind of the turning point, I think, when everything started to get better. Go ahead.
What was the darkest place? What was the darkest moment?
I think it was just there in that hotel room. Like I said, I mean, I literally just wanted to die. I wasn't eating. I was drinking a couple of fizz of Rumplements every day. And I just wanted everything to stop. And I was an absolute give up. And I mean, I have being in that space, locked in that hotel room, I had turned my back on my family, including, you know, children. And I turned my back on God, and that place was so, it was empty of any kindness. It was nothing but void. And I think that was probably the scariest, darkest part of it was that.
So you call your mom and you think that's the turning point. What did it take after that to move on?
So while I was gone, my brother, who happens to live here in Texas, he flew up to help my mother look around Portland trying to find me. And he was like a big influence in all of the changes, or he helped with that. And I talked with him after I came home, and he just told me straight up, he's like, it's time for you to come home. It's time for you to come home. So with that, I moved back to Texas, and it's been absolutely the best thing in the world for me. It's been amazing.
What did that say to you from your brother? What did that tell you? That little Bill.
It's interesting because me and my brother, we're very close now, but growing up, we were never, super close. You know, he was more of the football player, spice guy, like hyper intellectual. I mean, I was intellectual, but I was more chaotic. I was more into poetry and music. And so we just never saw eye to eye a lot. Right. So we fought a lot. And when he said that to me, like he had said it before, he's like, you need to come home. But at that point when he said it, there was something in me that was willing to hear him. And when I was willing to hear him, what I heard was love. You know, what I heard was, you know, he really had my best interest at heart when he said that. It wasn't some selfish, egotistical thing. It was, I love you and you need to come home and we need to fix you, you know.
Had you heard that before?
Not really. I mean, the women in my family hear that from more, but like the men, you know, we just, a lot of us are not, you know.
But did you, you never fit in?
No. I mean, I've always been a bit of the oddball and
the wild child.
You could say that. I mean, I did a lot of
formerly black sheep, now gray.
Yeah, I think I'm actually leaning more towards white. even. I mean, I do a lot of work. I mean, I've really been putting effort into becoming the kind of man that I want to be, you know, and that's kind of it is what nobody is else.
What is that?
So it's funny. I'll lead with this. So I used to believe that I had to be a certain kind of man. I used to believe that, you know, for example, like my stepfather, I believe that he was the epitome of what it is to be a man. And he was a hard man. He was a fighter. He was strong, and just he had all these qualities that I did not have. So I didn't think it was attainable for one. I never thought that I could be that type of man. So over the years, I've been very fortunate to meet mentors that are men that I consider mentors, including Deacon Tom English from Eugene, yourself included.
Well, thank you.
My employer here at Just Supplies. I mean, there are these men who are examples of the kind of man that I want to be. And that is, I want to be a kind man. I want to be compassionate. I want to represent honestly what God is doing in my life.
Right.
And do that with love. I mean, I think that the way that I was raised to believe a man should be, there was no room for that. There was no room for sensitivity or open honesty about how you're feeling, you know, and I know it is a work in progress, you know, what I am becoming. And I feel like a good man today.
Because for so many years, you were probably living up to that expectation and going, here you are, super spiritual, very, the way God made you is that you sense things that other people don't sense. And so you can't put, and like myself, you're really, really bad at putting something on. Like in terms of, I'm going to act like this because that's what people expect of me. I did that for 30 years as a news guy, and now people think I've gone crazy. And it's like, no, you know what? This is who I am. This is me. I cry. I laugh. I'm passionate. I'm sensitive. I understand things. I hear things from God that you don't hear. These are the things, because I'm in tune on a different level. And this is, I don't mean it's better. This is, in fact, it'd be easier to be that other dude and live my life. So like if I could carbon copy that, that'd be way easier. But this is the way I was designed. And I think you're the same way. And I think finding that is like so amazing because isn't that interesting though, Bill, too, because you were always looking for Buddha or the newest religion, because you were searching for that, you know, okay, God, if you're here, what is it? And it was never, he was speaking to you. Oh, what about this? What if he was talking to you like you would want to be talked to, but you couldn't hear it because your expectation was God talk to you like your stepfather?
It's a good possibility.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking about that with my own family, my own dad. It's right. Like, I grew up with this father like this, and I then think, okay, if God's my father, then he probably talks like this. And here's God over there in the corner going, no, actually, Rick, I made you just the way you are, and I'm speaking to you in a different language, not literally, but in the way that you're going to hear it, but you can't hear it because you think that's me, and that's not me.
Right. And I think that for myself, I think it comes from, you know, the way that I was raised with, again, the ideation of God, what that looked like. You know, it was the same thing with everything else. It's like I assumed that everybody else's perspective or take on God is the appropriate path, you know, not allowing myself to have it personal, you know, like it's really interesting. Like I love to write.
Me too.
And I was interviewing people and I was asking them about, my question was, what is your belief in God? And a friend of mine from Eugene, from St. Mary's Episcopal, he's a biblical scholar, like translates the Bible, really deep cat. And He said, Bill, you're asking the wrong question. He said, I think what you're asking is, what is my relationship with God? And there was something really poignant about that statement, because it took away that idea that my relationship with God has to be like yours.
Right.
And because it's absolutely not, my relationship with God is unlike anybody else's. It's right. Very unique. I think that's true for everybody.
Uh-huh.
But I had to come to that place where I was like, oh, yeah, you are a different character than I've been trying to paint you as. Or, you know, when people always talk about putting God in a box, even.
Right.
And how dare us have that kind of audacity, you know? And I think that has really changed my outlook on my relationship with God.
I remember when the book The Shack came out. Have you read it?
No, it is on my list.
You should read that. But God, the guy's daughter dies, is murdered. And then he's going back and he kind of, you can't tell whether it's a dream or going back to God. But anyway, God comes to him as a black woman. And right. So God is this black woman. And I remember my dad read the book and he says, God is not a black woman. He's a man. And he says this and this. And I'm not getting an argument. I don't want to argue with people about whether he's a black woman or whatever. But
right.
what I got out of that, and this is so weird because I think you and I are so much on the same plane. That's probably why we always care about each other. But I was like, I think God will come to me however he wants to get me to hear him and know how much he loves me. And if he has to come to me as an orangutan, I think he would do that for me. And so what you're talking about is a whole different spiritual plane that I've never thought about is, yeah, if God talks to me, that's one of the problems I have with church sometimes is everybody gets in, they sit in the pews, we do this thing, and it's all supposed to look the same for everybody. And for me, I kind of imagine God kind of laying there. And sometimes when I have a bad night, he and I spoon in bed. He spoons there, he holds on, and he goes, don't look around. And yet somebody else would say, well, that's when you get up and you get on your knees and you pray. To me, it's like, no, I'm cuddling. God and I, we cuddle. And that's what we do.
And how is that not a form of prayer? I mean, communication with God is really what that's about. So,
well,
I mean,
and if everybody would kind of look at it that way, then you'd realize that if you hear something that other people don't hear, it doesn't mean it's wrong. You know,
right.
if it lines up with his word, it doesn't mean it's wrong, but he's going to communicate with you know, Bill, I knew asking you to come on here was going to be eye-opening for me. Yeah, we never got to bridge this gap like the God thing. So what does God think of you? What do you think?
I think I'm exactly where he wants me. I mean, it's interesting, you know, as we talk, I recollect on, you know, we talked about that one dark spot, but there have been many, you know, and I've traveled the U.S. I've, you know, been in Boston, Chicago, New York, Denver, like I've been all over the place and I have done ungodly amounts of drugs and alcohol, trying to find peace. You know, I mean, I've put myself in dangerous situations and God kept me safe. For some reason, I mean, I have friends that I traveled with that have passed on, you know, from one got hit by a train. I have friends that have OD'd. I mean, just that lived the same lifestyle and they were taken out and I wasn't. So I can look back in retrospect and you talk about God speaking to you. God spoke to me by protecting me. You know, I must have some purpose. If I'm still standing after everything that I've gone through.
No, I mean, and I'm not going to dredge this up, but I remember you and I sitting down to coffee the first time and you told me some of the stories of your past and I kept a straight face. But I remember going home to my wife and she didn't know you or anything, but I said, I can't believe what this guy's lived through. Because I mean, you did some, I mean, we all have, and I'm not judging you. You know that I love you, but you did some bad shit. I mean, stuff that I'd go, wow, I can't even imagine, you know? And that's when I saw you living in Texas and that you were doing so much better. And I went, I got to find out. Well, I know now. Now I know exactly why I had you on the show. Because I'm learning from you, Bill. We always learn from each other.
Well, I agree. And I do too. I mean, conversation is the best form or best way to learn, really.
So what are you doing now? You're in Texas. You got out of Oregon. How important was it for you to get away from what you were and by, because I think people don't understand that. Sometimes people go, oh, Rick, you moved off to Montana. I had to get away from being Rick Dancer. Now I still am, and I'd still market myself this way, but it's different. I'm not living that in the same way. And that's been super helpful for me and God. Because I think you got to get away from what your perceptions of yourself, you know, because I was wrong. I'm not that guy.
Right. And see, it's interesting because, again, I'll go back to my brother. And when I came back down, we had lots of conversations because I have felt I felt a serious shift in a lot of my beliefs. Like I try to stay out of it. For the most part, political discussions, social discussions, stuff like that. But one of the things that he pointed out that really resonated with me about living in Oregon is I surrounded myself with good people. I mean, don't get me wrong, they were good people. But a lot of the belief systems that were floating around, they weren't me. And in order to hang out with these people again, I was back to putting on a face of, sure, no, I absolutely agree with you. And back in the back of my mind, I'm like, no, you know, and I felt it kind of before I came back down here, I really started leaning into libertarianism, right? I mean, I was like, I really like the ideas behind that. And then me and my brother were talking about that. And he's like, you're a Republican. I'm like, no, listen, like, there's this. And I really like what they're saying here. And he's like, no, it's because you're still holding on to trying to put on a face to impress other people. You're trying to say that you think this way in order to have this person like you or be a part of this thing, you know? And again, I think it's very similar to the relationship with God thing, because it's finding a truth within yourself that you can do business with, where it's, maybe I am a Republican, you know, I mean, on the political side, but I mean, I try to, it's funny, like I was talking to one of our delivery guys today about it. And I was like, you know, I don't care enough. You know, I mean, if there's something politically I find wrong, then I'm going to vote a certain way, plain and simple.
Right.
If there's something social going on that I disagree with, I'm going to adjust my personal life to make that change in the world, because that's all I can really do, you know? And that's, and I find the same is true in pretty much every aspect of my life. You know, if I am right with me, then I am right with the world, and there's nothing in the world that can shake that.
Right. Well, see, what I don't think people sometimes back in Oregon understand about leaving for us, not for them, but for years, I bit my tongue a lot because I knew how much I could say to get along. And people would walk up to me and say weird stuff like, well, obviously you wouldn't vote for Trump, you know, and you're going, so how arrogant is that for you to think that obviously no one, you know, I mean, you didn't ask, you didn't say, you know, what do you think of Ron Wyden or anything like that.
Right.
You make an assumption that everyone thinks like you do. And I think that's a huge flaw in the Oregonian people.
Yeah. And if you don't jump in that line, you are ostracized.
Yep.
You know,
and I think COVID really blot that out. That's when we left. We went, I cannot live like this, because it was watching the most, you know, like if you didn't, you know, here, you know, my body, my choice for abortion. But when it comes to my body, my choice for a vaccine, I don't get that.
And exactly.
You go, and you go, wait a minute. Do you see the hypocrisy in that? And they don't. So let's get back to God. What is he? What do you think is the next thing for you, Bill?
Well, that's a good question. I really try to do this one day at a time thing when it comes to my relationship with God. I pray for insight. I pray for the willingness to accept answers that I may not like, which does happen often. But I'm getting better about hitting those road bumps and going, there's a purpose behind this. What is it? Instead of jumping to reactive behavior or reactive thinking, it's more, okay, well, what can I take from this? What is this going to strengthen rather than what is it going to take away from me?
Right.
And as for the future, when it comes to it, I'm excited to find out. I don't want to be complacent. I don't want to be too comfortable, and I don't think that God is allowing for that. I have an amazing job with my like I said, the owner of the company is just an amazing mentor. The friends that I do have are just wonderful, honest people. I have an amazing woman in my life. My children love who I am, and so
Do you have
really, I mean, all I can
peace?
do.
Do you have peace? Do you have peace?
For the most part, I do. I
Yeah,
really do.
you look like it. You really do. You look like my friend Bill, but kind of what I thought you would be. Like you could be. You know what I mean? When we'd sit and talk, I'd see this guy, but he wasn't really sitting across from me, but I knew that guy was coming.
Yeah, I think I was still quite distracted with knowing that I wasn't being the man that I could be. And I think that that was a very, very uncomfortable place to be.
Well, and especially if you don't know what a man like you would look like, because you're basing it on, this false image that it fits for some people but doesn't fit for all of us. And I mean, I relate to that. It's always, here's what you're supposed to be. And it's like, well, I'm not like that. I think about deep things. If I go to a football game, chances are really good that my wife will be watching the game and I'll be finding you or someone next to me going, hey, so now what are you up to today? And having, because I got so much time on this earth, and I want to spend that meeting as many people and understanding them, maybe better understanding me. And I think by the more people I meet, the more I'm gonna, when I get to the end of this life, I could look at God and say, I knew you were gonna look like that. Because you look like every person you threw in my life, the Bill, the Bob, the Janet, all those people you put in my life. And I think he's trying to go, you want to meet me? You got to meet Bill. And I'm like, Bill? And now I go, Bill.
I think
Go
that's such
ahead.
a fantastic way to view life. I don't. I think there was part of me that always kind of had that in me because I have met so many people in my life, and I had the love of my fellow man to investigate, for lack of a better word, who they are, where they come from, what brought them to the place that they're at. And I think that as a Christian, that vision changes even further because, now I can look across at another person. I may not disagree with their lifestyle, who they are, or any of that. I mean, there may be so many differences between us, but the common thread is the creator. I mean, there's that common thing. And there must be, again, as reasons go, there must be a reason this person was put in front of me. What is that?
Right.
And so, instead of just dismissing somebody right away, why not, hey, who are you? Again, what are you up to? What's going on in your life? And I think that for me, Texas, that's part of what I love about it. The people here are that kind of creature. When you walk into an establishment or you just bump into somebody on the street, and they say, hey, how you doing today? How's it going? They mean it. It's not just like some passing nice to see you and walk on. It's an actual care and concern for who you are, and they appreciate your life, you know, and that we function as a community. Everybody watches out for everybody. And it's amazing to be in a life like that, where, you know, and I can probably attribute a lot of that to God here. I mean, there are a lot of people here that are good, God-fearing individuals who, I mean, there is hypocrisy. Don't get me wrong. That's everywhere. But for the most part, there are a lot of people who know that I call myself a Christian. So therefore, how I treat this individual, how I treat this situation is going to reflect on my relationship with God. You know, they're holding themselves accountable to that relationship. And I think that for me, it's a huge education, you know, to see individuals doing that.
And you're free to be that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's cool because here, you know, people have a lot of, I think a lot of people have a lot of negative things to say about small town USA, small town Texas, whatever. They can have their opinions, but that sense of community overrides any negativity that other people may think is existent here. It's just not. You know, small town Texas is not racist. Small town Texas is not closed-minded. Small town Texas expects you to be responsible for the person that you are, and, you know, and to be respectful to others. You know, those expectations are there, and I think those are prudent. I think those expectations are necessary to find peace in your life, because living like that, you don't have that. Well, I'm going to conform to this conversation. I'm going to conform to your belief. I'm not going to do that. I mean, I can disagree with you, and I can respect you, and I can have a conversation with you.
Right. And I feel that way here in Montana too, where I didn't feel like that in Oregon for the last 20 years. And I didn't know it until I left.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it was like, it's like having a muzzle on and not knowing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So So I got to wrap this little baby up. But Bill, man, you know what? I love you just like I did a long time ago.
I love you too, man. And I enjoy watching you, and I enjoy who you are. And you, again, I mean, from before I even met you, you're an inspirational guy. I mean, and you continue to be that, and getting to know you better, you know, in the past few years has only proven that's real. You know what I mean? Because people can say whatever they want about Rick Dancer, but I have sat at the Fifth Street Market across from Rick Dancer drinking coffee, and we have talked things real. We have talked as two men sitting together will, things that would bear not repeating online, but you know what I mean? So I know who you are. You have shown me who you are. And when I see you doing these interviews, when I see you on your podcast, you are exactly that Rick Dancer. And I think that is phenomenal, and you are to be commended on that. Just representing who you are.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate that, because I don't, you see the comments on my page. I don't see that all the time.
I know. And yeah, know that you're loved from West Texas.
Okay. Well, we ought to get together, because I'd love to come visit Texas, and I'll bring Kathy down, and I need to meet your family, and we'll figure it out.
Absolutely.
And I got room, plenty of room for you in Montana too.
That would be lovely. I haven't been to Montana since I was a kid, so.
Oh, we got an Airbnb in the basement, so I can, you're not getting charged, but you can stay there. You can come up and stay with me.
Sounds good. I'll take you up on it.
Bill, it was really good catching up with you. You made my week.
You've made mine too, sir. You made mine.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
So now you know why I asked him to come on the show. That's what it's all about. You know, the connector is really, I had a lady write me today, and she says, you know, you're starting to talk more about God. And it's like, I think it's because in the past, I always knew there were people out there that don't like God and don't like talking about God. But I'm a guy who, I listen to Sam Harris once in a while, and I don't really like him that much, what he believes. But he's I find some truth in some of the things that he says, and he's totally against God and all that. I'm starting to find out that I can still speak out about my relationship with God. And if it offends you, that's your choice. And I'll tell you what, it's opening up a whole door, because you know what? I think this is what we need to be doing more right now. It's creating community, not just where you live, but in the country that you live in. And you saw this Oliver Anthony, is that his name, or is it Anthony Oliver? I think it's Oliver Anthony, singing that song. And he has lit a fire under America with just honest, true, real words about what all of us are experiencing out here, not the elites, but all of us are experiencing, and he's speaking for us. And remember that God doesn't need a huge army. He had Gideon use the 300 men, and that was all he needed to take over 30,000 or whatever the number was. Somebody came on and corrected me on that too. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. You get the gist of what I'm saying. God can do this with just a few people. He saved, what was it, Sodom and Gomorrah because there was 10 good people or something like that. You know, he doesn't need thousands and thousands of people, but what he needs is people committed to him and understanding what he's doing and loving his fellow man and woman. Yeah, we live in crazy times, but you know what? There are these little morsels that you go looking for and you find them. And that's one that I just shared with you tonight, Bill. 1L Bill. He doesn't misspell it. He's just a guy who conserves. He's more conservative. He doesn't need 2 L's. Bill only needs 1 L. Who gave it 2 L's anyway? I don't know. Saves ink too. I want to thank Chris Dental Family Dentistry, Michael Bratlin, one of my dear friends, for sponsoring our show. Montana Oral Surgeons and Implant Center for sponsoring the show. Fairway Independent Mortgage, another good friend, Greg Hinkle over there, one of our sponsors. And Alfred Taylor. Endless possibilities, doing good things for people. We do have a new sponsor coming on in September. If you are a business that wants to get attention, our numbers have climbed up. We're like over 300,000 people now. And most of that's in Oregon. We do have about 15,000 here in Montana. If you want to do some sponsorship and get the word out, if you just like what we do, that's how we pay for it. It's a sponsorship. So get a hold of me, rick@rickdancer.com. That was a little pitch, huh? All right. We will be back on Tuesday next week. And I think I'm talking to a guy tomorrow that we're going to hold over for that show. And he's from Oregon and he's doing a podcast. He's never done this stuff before, but he's doing a podcast on the timber industry because he's part of it. And I'm super excited to talk to somebody. Anybody's got the guts and the passion to do something like that, I want them on my show. All right. That's it for now. I'll talk to you guys later. Have a great evening. See you, Bill.